Across the upper Midwest, fishing shanties are a common sight on frozen lakes every winter. But in at least one northern Wisconsin community, the number of shanties has increased dramatically this year. As Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio reports, that might be considered something of an economic indicator.
I'm standing on the McCleary Bridge, which connects the city of Wausau to the prosperous commercial strip of nearby Rib Mountain. But as I look east from the highway onto Lake Wausau, with temperatures barely above zero, it's a different world. Instead of the usual handful of fishing shanties, as you walk onto the frozen lake, you can see well over 100 of them, more than three times the usual number, clustered together on the ice.
Money's tight. People aren't going up north and taking their shanties up north, so they're staying close to homes. I think the money's the situation this year.
64-year-old David Nowolny of Rib Mountain fishes from the cab of his truck in the midst of the Lake Wausau shanty town. He says there's a big difference between this winter and other winters, the economy. And Nowolny says many of the fishermen are out of work.
You know, I've talked to quite a few out here that have been laid off for 3-4 months already, and that's all they do is come out here all day, you know, even to catch a meal of fish.
Gordon Berna of Wausau is looking out the door of his shanty and reaching pretty much the same conclusion.
A lot of people laid off, I imagine. Nothing to do with salt. You got a lot of time to fish.
Berna opens a hatch on the plywood floor.
Froze a little bit, so I just have to open them up.
And using a hand auger, clears the ice off the top of three fishing holes that let him drop a line deep into Lake Wausau.
What are you catching right now?
Oh, nothing. I was out here yesterday, I didn't get anything. But they're catching bluegills and crappies.
Berna is retired and says he's seen his share of local businesses come and go in this area.
The last place was Fiskars, and I worked at Murray's on 3rd Street. I worked for Kraft Foods on Scott Street for 18 years. They moved out of town. Murray's closed. I worked for Bard. They moved to Mexico.
And Fiskars?
And Fiskars. I retired.
As we walk across the frozen lake, just 100 feet or so behind Gordon Berna's shanty, we encounter 28-year-old Josh Hitz of Antigo, who sits on a bucket, a line dangling into a hole in the ice. A black dog and a young boy are sitting inside his warm SUV, which is parked on the ice.
I was a certified nursing assistant.
When did you get laid off?
About 3 months ago. It's just lack of work. You know, I mean, like I said, I'm right here. This is how I catch my meals, a lot of it, so we get by as much as we can, you know.
And Hitz is not optimistic about the short-term prospects for the economy.
I think it's going to go down yet. I really do. I think it's going to get worse before it gets better.
That pessimism is shared by a number of ice fishermen here, including David Nowolny.
No, we haven't turned the corner yet. I think we're going to look at another year yet.
The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources says interest in fishing and the sale of licenses traditionally goes up as the economy goes down. And in today's economy, it appears there are more people than usual on the ice, fishing in shanty towns like the one on Lake Wausau. For NPR News, I'm Glenn Moberg in Wausau, Wisconsin.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel in Washington.
And I'm Madeline Brand in California. The most positive news on the economy to date. Those words today from the White House describing a better-than-expected burst of growth late last year. Economists agreed that the news was indeed good, but as NPR's John Itzty reports, they disagree on whether the economy is truly out of the woods.
The 5.7% growth rate for October, November, and December significantly exceeded most economists' expectations. John Sylvia, who's the chief economist for Wells Fargo, says it adds to his belief in the recovery.
I'm far more confident now, having seen this number, that we will have sustained growth. There's no W here in this economic period. No double-dip recession.
What boosted Sylvia's outlook were some other numbers further down in the GDP report. For instance, consumer spending grew at a 2% annual rate in the fourth quarter, and business investment in equipment and software also grew nicely. Sylvia says that suggests confidence is returning, which is necessary to create a self-sustaining recovery. But Mark Sandy of Moody'sEconomy.com is skeptical.
I don't think the coast is clear. For that to occur, we need to see businesses start hiring again. I anticipate that this spring, but until that occurs, I don't think we conclude that we're home free here.
Sandy says the consumer spending number was good news, but points out that most of the 5.7% growth rate at the end of last year was due to businesses readjusting their inventory levels, ordering more from producers to restock their warehouses than they did at the depths of the recession. He argues that to make sure the recovery continues, there needs to be more government stimulus.
The risks are still high that we could backtrack into a recession. The foreclosure crisis, the lack of credit, these are all very serious threats, and most notable is the lack of hiring, at least so far. So that's why I think it's very important for policymakers to remain aggressive.
Sandy believes that if the job creation proposals President Obama unveiled during his State of the Union speech were quickly enacted, it could boost growth. He thinks it could increase from 2.5% this year to over 3%, enough to start bringing down the unemployment rate from 10% where it is today. But Wells Fargo's John Sylvia says more stimulus is not needed and not a good idea.
It's hard to justify adding permanent workers with these temporary programs. A lot of businesses are going to look at this and say, how can I hire somebody today if you're going to take away this temporary program in a year or two?
Undeterred by arguments like that, President Obama was pushing his jobs proposals today, and he had a tough audience, the Republican Congressional Retreat in Baltimore, where he outlined a new job tax credit for small businesses.
And here's how it would work. Employers would get a tax credit of up to $5,000 for every employee they add in 2010. They'd get a tax break for increases in wages as well.
In addition, the president is proposing that $30 billion of the rescue loans that banks are repaying be made available to small community banks so they can make loans to small businesses. The Congress will get these and other job creation proposals officially when the president sends his budget to Capitol Hill on Monday. John Idstey, NPR News, Washington.
A story now about a country that seems to violate the laws of the economic universe. It has one of the lowest poverty rates in the world, low unemployment, a steadily growing economy, and almost no corruption. That country is Denmark. Our Planet Money correspondent David Kestenbaum recently visited to find out if things are really as perfect as they seem.
By one survey, the Danish people are the happiest in the world. And on this day, even though it's pitch dark at 4 in the afternoon, and it's raining, people are out on their bicycles and remarkably chipper. I took a walk with economist Ove Petersen at the Copenhagen Business School, who pointed out one strange thing. The government buildings, built centuries ago, they're gigantic.
All the buildings in downtown Copenhagen and the Royal Castle, the Parliament building, the ministries, are oversized.
Oh, the buildings are too big.
Yeah, they were built for an empire. And now they exist in one of the smallest states in the world.
It turns out the government today has no problem filling those buildings. If you're one of those people who think the U.S. has big government, well, there is big government, and then there is Denmark. The Danish government looks after everyone, provides free, high-quality education, free, high-quality health care. Of course, it's not really free. Denmark has some of the highest taxes in the world. Just getting a cup of coffee costs more.
Okay, that's... Caffè latte?
Cappuccino.
Cappuccino, okay.
How much is that?
30, please.
And how much is tax?
How much is what?
Tax.
Tax. 25%?
That's pretty high.
It's excellent. Actually, I'm Swedish. They have it much better in Denmark because they have higher taxes.
That tax-loving woman was Ilja Nodra. And that tax, it's nothing. Buy a car, you'll pay 200% tax. That's right. Instead of paying, say, $20,000, you'd have to pay $60,000. A headline from a Danish newspaper last year read, "Denmark keeps world tax title for the highest taxes in the world." Income tax is high even for the middle class. And yet, a lot of people are okay with it. Sina Bull Olesen is a student.
I think it is terrific.
You think paying taxes is terrific?
I do actually think it is terrific. And I get a little bit angry because constantly in Denmark there's this talk that we have to lower the taxes, lower the taxes, lower the taxes.
Danes do get things for their taxes. If you lose your job, you can collect unemployment insurance for up to 4 years. When I sat down with the economist Ove Petersen, he told me there is a downside.
Some people will take the opportunity to stay unemployed because they're paid to stay unemployed.
So that means a slightly slower growing economy.
Yeah, there's a kind of slack in the system.
Denmark has an interesting kind of hybrid economy. It has this huge welfare state, but it has also fiercely embraced a lot of free market ideas. The unemployment benefits are generous, but it's also very easy to fire people. That makes the economy nimble. Employers can get rid of workers when they don't need them and hire them back quickly when they do. Peterson says losing your job here is just not that big a deal. Now, all countries face choices like this. How do you want to set up your economy? Those decisions shape how you live and your psychology. In Denmark, for instance, there aren't severe class distinctions because the poor get helped, the rich get taxed, so everyone gets squashed into a big, fat middle class. One economist told me, look, we don't have any geniuses and we don't have the best pro athletes. They leave because of the high taxes. But overall, we're doing well. That doing well thing, though, it worries Per Golestrup. He runs a medium-sized shipping company, the Clipper Group.
A big difference between Denmark and the States is, for example, if you go to a football match, any sports activity, you know, whether you win or lose, it's not so important. You participate. You didn't win, but you participate. Where in America, second place doesn't figure. And we don't have that killer instinct. And I feel that that's dangerous because we have this attitude, you know, well, we're doing fine. We've done well so far. But that doesn't mean you're always going to do well.
Ove Peterson, the economist, likes a lot of things about his country's economy. But he says one danger with big government, big welfare programs, is that they don't shrink. They get bigger and bigger and bigger.
And the threat, of course, or the challenge, of course, is that the welfare state could become so big that the economy could collapse because it's so big.
Do you worry about that?
Absolutely.
That's the thing about economies that look like miracles. They don't always last. Denmark could stumble, but so could the United States. David Kestenbaum, NPR News.
It may not have felt like it, but it turns out that the U.S. economy grew at a much faster pace during the last 3 months of 2009. The Commerce Department said yesterday that the nation's growth rate hit 5.7%, the fastest increase in 6 years. As NPR's Jim Zaroli reports, part of the surge was due to what economists call an inventory correction.
Last year turned out to be the worst year for the U.S. economy since 1946. It shrank by 2.4%. But here's the good news. The downturn occurred in the first half of the year. Lakshman Ashathan of the Economic Cycle Research Institute says growth was up sharply by the second half of the year. And he says the 5.7% growth rate during the last quarter means the economy entered this year on a pretty strong rebound.
Clearly, it's a good number. It shows that the recovery has been gaining speed as we have been debating whether or not it even exists.
There was an important qualification in yesterday's number. U.S. companies had cut back production so fast earlier in the year that by the fall they no longer had enough goods to sell, so they had to start churning out more products just to restock their shelves. Much of the increase in production was simply an effort to play catch-up, says Brian Bethune, chief U.S. financial economist at Global Insight.
Basically, they're producing at a higher rate than what they're selling, so that some of the product goes into inventories.
The problem is that companies won't keep producing at that same fast rate unless consumers and businesses increase their buying as well. There's some evidence that's already happening. Consumer spending was up at an annual rate of 2% during the fourth quarter. Business investment and exports were up. Achathan says that's good, but he says it won't make up for the damage that's been done to the economy over the past 2 years.
The problem is that we lost so much during this recession. We lost over 7 million jobs, a lot of GDP loss, a lot of wealth loss, and the amount of time it will take to recover that is going to be years.
There's also the worry that growth will slow down once federal government stimulus programs end. Still, Achathan says yesterday's report is clear evidence that the economy is mending. He describes the economy right now this way. It's like falling into the deep end of a swimming pool and kicking off from the bottom. You're traveling very quickly, he says, but there's that moment of anxiety about whether you'll reach the surface. Jim Zaroli, NPR News, New York.